The 2024 International DIR Conference is coming up March 15th and 16th in New York City, and registration is now free. The conference theme is Connect, Engage, Develop, and Learn with DIR. I hope to see you there. Check out icdl.com/conferences for more information. You're listening to Affect Autism, where affect is the number one tool we use in supporting child development through playful interactions. Welcome, listeners and viewers. I have DIR expert and training leader Stephanie Peters, an occupational therapist and the clinical director at Kinder Growth in New Jersey, for a return podcast. Welcome, Stephanie.
Thank you, Daria.
This episode, we are talking about what sharing looks like developmentally. And I was very interested when we talked about doing this podcast, Stephanie, because even parents of typical children are always trying to get their kids to share. Two-year-olds developmentally don't share yet. But when we have children who are neurodivergent and have developmental differences, there's some extra stuff that we might need to think about. So I'm really glad that you are here, and tell us what you had on your mind.
I started thinking about this because I have a kid, she's 2 years old. And as you said, developmentally, sharing is a really tricky thing that we get to explore all the time. But I had a friend over who has a behavioral background, and we were playing, and she's an awesome player. But I noticed that in the play, there was the emphasis on my friend asking my daughter Violet for a toy, and then Violet clamming up, getting stressed and not wanting to share. And then my friend responded with, "Oh, I'm so sad," and got more emotional about it, but it was kind of a farce. Like, she didn't really care about the crayon that my daughter had, but it was the idea of, oh, if you don't share with me, I get sad. And then when Violet eventually did share, she said, "Oh, thank you for sharing. And at the end, when we said goodbye, it was, "Bye, Violet. Thank you for sharing with me. That made me so happy." And it got me really thinking about the social expectation that we have for kids. When we teach social skills in general, there's usually a sharing goal, but it felt so sticky and clunky and like uncomfortable and not genuine. It got me thinking about, okay, so with my DIR lens, how can I rethink this and support it? So that's kind of the impetus of why I reached out with, like, I have some thoughts about sharing. Can we talk about it?
I love it. Well, I mean, I went through a lot of Dr. Gordon Neufeld's courses over the years when my son was young. And that's one thing that he had stressed all the time is meeting children where they are developmentally. And you can't expect children to be at developmental capacities when they're not ready yet. And sharing is one of those things that comes later. And when kids are two, it's all about what they have in front of them and it's theirs. And they're just forming that sense of self, me, you, you're my mommy, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it got me thinking, why is this hard to begin with? Where is the tricky point? Like, it was very clear to me that the grown-ups neurotypical type of approach to teaching sharing is, if you don't share with me, I'm going to be really sad. And if you do share with me, I'm going to be very happy, which creates the system of, so if I don't share with you, you'll be mad at me and you won't like me. And if I do share with you, you'll be happy with me. But what about what I think about sharing to begin with? Why do I need this? Why, like, what's going on in myself, and how, really ultimately helping me think, well, how can we connect with someone when they don't want to share? How can we set boundaries if we have to share? And how can we be more developmentally minded to support someone intrinsically being interested in sharing with another human?
So we have to break those 3 points down, because those are so big. And of course, the element of emotions, right? Like, when children are little, Dr. Neufeld talks about kids feeling one emotion at a time. It's all or nothing. And until they get that prefrontal cortex stuff happening, the mixing bowl, he calls it, where you can sort of mix, well, wait a second. On the one hand, I want to share, but on the other hand, it's mine. Or on the one hand, I love my sibling, but on the other hand, I want to hit them because they took my toy, you know? And of course, in DIR, we talk about that in the higher capacities. So that emotional component isn't even there yet, for children too, to understand that, you know, wait a sec, you're happy. Wait a sec, you're mad at me. Wait, how does that impact me? Then that whole, you know, theory of mind, like what's going on in your mind? You know, I might still be all only in my mind, depending on where you are developmentally. So that's so interesting. Okay, so let's break down those 3 points that you just talked about.
Right, I know. It's like once I started thinking about it, I'm like, this is so big. Why aren't there novels about the complexities of sharing? And I was so thankful for my 2-year-old to helping me think about this. So, on the one hand, you mentioned the emotional piece of it. And what struck me with that interaction between my friend and my daughter was there was like one circle that was expected. Right? It was, oh, can I have a turn? Then you give it to me. There was no space for the emotional processing of, A, wait, what are you telling me? Processing the cue. What's my plan? Supporting the praxis piece of like, how do I help you and respond to you? But what do I do next once I give that to you? Right? So she was playing with something and it kind of looked like she was done. But she's 2, and developmentally, and for many and most people, we're holding on to something because we're not sure what to do next. So when someone asks you to share and forces you to share, we're not supporting the person and experiencing, okay, well, I feel confused, or I feel stressed, or I'm not sure what to do next, or I don't have a plan, but I'm holding on to this because it's grounding me in the moment. But if you take it away from me, I'm left with no plan. I'm left with nothing next to do other than knowing that if I don't give it to you, you're going to be mad at me, and I'm going to be stuck, and I'm going to be more disengaged. So, from a relationship perspective and an individual differences perspective, there's so much more that needs to happen in that moment. And I think just as a parent, trusting that if they don't share right away this time, it doesn't mean that this is the expectation they're going to have from now on. I think there's this fear of if you don't share, you are going to learn you don't have to share, and then you will never share.
That you just like nailed it on the head. That's exactly what parents are worried about. And they're also worried about judgment from other people, like,
Totally.
oh, I'm not teaching my child to share, therefore I'm raising a child who's going to all the things that you just said. But you know that I love that you brought in the praxis component because you're an occupational therapist, of course. And you know, that's a piece that we don't think about ever as well. Like if they give you the toy and they're not yet thinking about what happens next, that's an important piece as well. But I'm just totally thoroughly enjoying everything you're saying. Continue, please. I'm gonna
It's
take
really
notes if I think of something to bring up. Okay.
so in the moment, my behavioral-minded friend was asking, oh, can I have a turn, please? And my daughter, you could see in her face, she looked confused, she looked stressed, and she's a sweet, loving person, but it resulted in her having the stress response that she clung tighter because who knows why, right? Like, I'm sure it was a complicated combination of a lot of things, including, well, like, why do I have to give this to you? I don't want to give this to you. I don't know what to do next. I'm not ready to give it to you. Or just like, give me a hot second to process what you're telling me and think about my plan, right? But if the child doesn't give it to you right away, and then we push, what does the child do? They clamp on tighter and then they get dysregulated and maybe cry or fuss or become more relationshiply disengaged and disconnected. And so then what do? We say, oh, you have to give it to me. You have to get used to this. You have to get over it. You have to practice feeling comfort in the discomfort of having your things taken away, which there is beauty and power in building comfort in the discomfort, but it always has to come from a foundation of connection to ground you. And
Yes.
without that, we're teaching somebody that The world is unpredictable. You are never safe. You will constantly be ruptured in your relationships with no option for repair. You're not understood. You're not supported. And your stuff gets taken away. And your response is going to have to be a fight flight experience. So either you or freeze or you shut down or you start fighting someone because that's really what your nervous system is availing you to.
Yeah, and you know that's the one thing that and I sound like I'm like a Gordon Neufeld cult member or something, but I mean this is the stuff he talked about when my son was your daughter's age that I was just soaking in, and it's not unique to Dr. Neufeld, it's developmental psychology, but he talked about how you really are rupturing that relationship when you are essentially making threats to your child, like, give this to me or I will be upset, which you may not say explicitly that way, but that is rupturing the relationship. If you have a prized possession that you're playing with and that's being threatened to be taken away from you, you're going to say, well, why is this person doing this to me? And again, I can hear the voices saying, but they have to learn. But the point that Stephanie made is the most important one, which is it needs to come from a place of connection, understanding, and having that whole concept of what does it mean to share, which, you know, Colette Ryan talks about meaning making, understanding sharing, but that involves so much, like we talked about it. It involves understanding the perspective of another person, which comes at the fourth functional emotional developmental capacity. It's just starting there. So yeah, there's so much depth to that. So I think yeah, all of those points you bring up are so much more complex than we ever think about.
But like, I'm sure if you look at every social skill section IEP, there's a sharing goal. It's all the time. It happens all the time, and it's one of the ways that we measure somebody's capacity to be social. But we're very black and white in thinking about it. So I don't know. It's very complex, but I was excited to dive into this a little more because when we teach somebody to share, another way of thinking about that or reframing it is we can help somebody think about connection and what connection looks like and the different ways to share experiences with somebody. We can share things, we can share attention, we can share smiles, we can share moments, we can. The goal is to share moments of connection with somebody. And sometimes that happens because somebody takes your thing. And developmentally, if you put 2 2-year-olds in a room together or put two people in a room together, there's probably going to be a little bit of a tuffle is the word. I don't know if that's a real word, but you know what I mean, a kerfuffle where you're both pulling on the same thing. That will happen, but for the majority, we can support that experience by having a million different moments of connection that will lend us to understand that there is a back and forth reciprocal nature of interactions. Where if someone wants something from you, you can say no, or you can say maybe 100 other things like, I'm not ready yet. I'm still playing with this, or give me a minute, or like, I'm really enjoying being with this. Do you want to look at it with me? There's a million other options. It does not have to be, if I don't give this to you, I'm alone in the world and no one likes me. There's a huge gray area that supports more healthy relationships in the long run.
Thank you for listening to Affect Autism. We'll be back with this week's podcast in just a minute.
Spread the word, invite your colleagues, friends, and anyone who shares your passion for DIR. The 2024 International DIR Conference is coming up March 15th and 16th in New York City, and registration is now free. Here's what you can expect at the conference: engaging and inspiring keynote presentations, networking opportunities to connect with like-minded people, interactive workshops on a wide range of topics, presentations from professionals, parents, and self-advocates. I will be talking about ICDL's parent support meetings and how you can support parents with the concerns that they have, and a closing performance by Zane Harshaw of the band Blue Spectrum, and much more. Visit www.icdl.com/conferences for more information.
And now, let's get back to our podcast. So if parents are listening to this, who knows how old their children are? My son is 14 and a half, and he's still learning about sharing. So you can do a lot more with a child who is further along in their developmental capacities. You can sort of have that connection. You can start to negotiate. You can understand maybe that, oh, your friend really wants to play with this too. You've had your turn, and they can sort of start to understand that. With a child that's two, maybe they can't understand that. But what would you suggest to parents who maybe have a child, any age, neurotypical or neurodivergent, who absolutely won't share, and maybe they have siblings at home and they're trying to grab a toy, and that child may even get violent if they, and when I say violent, okay, let me reframe that. Dave Nelson was our guest in Parent Support Group, and we were talking about aggression, and he said, I don't like the word aggression, so I'll say I don't like the word violence. He said, I like the word reactivity because it is usually never with ill intent when this kind of stuff happens. So it's more reactivity. So let me say that. You have a child who's very reactive when the sibling tries to play with the same toy. What is the way that we foster sharing? And of course, I'll just tell everybody, just work on those developmental capacities, and in time it'll come. But when people are so stressed on, I need to be working on this, what is a way that you can sort of say, this is what needs to happen first?
Yeah, for sure. It's a great question. It's making me think of one of my clients in Kinder Growth. As a side note, we work with families in the home doing floor time in New Jersey. So we have the beautiful opportunity to have lots of conversations about I can do floor time, but there's also a sibling in the room that has very different individual differences, and they are fighting over this toy all the time. So sharing comes up constantly in just real life. And if we're in a beautiful therapeutic setting, we can make all of these sorts of environmental attunement and accommodations. And in the home, it gets trickier because we can't control for everything. So thinking about the first FEDC, the first functional emotional developmental capacity, regulation, and curiosity in the world, thinking about what is making regulation so tricky. And there's probably a very, very long list for everybody about what makes regulation tricky. But I would offer that thinking about praxis and the ability to come up with a plan and figure out how to interact and connect with someone is a big component of that. So the example I'm thinking of is an older young adolescent when his 2, 3-year-old brother was playing with a toy, he would come over and grab it and put it away every time. And it escalated every time to them arguing and trying to express their unhappiness and frustration, and it became more physical. So mom and I were talking about I can't keep separating them. I can't keep taking away the toys. This isn't working and it's getting harder. So the shift is, it's not about separating, it's about how do we get everybody closer together? And how do we support more connection, which is going to allow more opportunities to feel comfortable and safe building relationship while we're in the same space, getting used to somebody's individual differences, getting used to how they send cues, and feeling like we can be successful together. So in that situation, thinking about FEDC one, supporting ideation, we kind of took away the pressure of toys that required more ideas. So more pretend play type of toys require a lot of praxis energy. You have to think about, okay, what do I do with this? What comes next? How do I involve somebody else? How do I share my ideas? How do I get them to do? It's very layered. And so we lean towards more of the tactile sensory play where there are multiple things and the fun and the play becomes experiencing it together rather than sharing the item. We're sharing the moment and we're connecting in the joy of how this feels in our bodies. And she said, this is actually kind of working. It's hard to do. It takes a lot more planning. It takes setup. It takes time and energy to put this in place. It takes effort to, like, as soon as we get home, we support an interaction. But it was helpful, and it kind of set off the regulation pattern for the rest of the evening.
I love it. I love it. So I know that we talk about different stages of play where children will be, you know, focused on sensory experiences, like little babies will put things in their mouth and play with items. And, you know, some of our kids do that well into grade school, elementary school age, and then getting more into object play where it's cause and effect, where, you know, my son spent years in that stage and still loves it, right? Let's throw everything off the bunk bed and see what happens when it lands on the ground. Let's pop the water balloons and watch them explode on the driveway. Let's, whatever it is. And then getting slowly more into that imaginative play, which then can develop, you know, through FEDC 4, 5, and 6 so richly into these emotional themes and bridging all these different sequences in their play. And, but that experience of sensory play doesn't mean you're going backwards if your child's already in imaginary play. You're saying that it's fostering this connection and this experience where you're learning to be with another person that maybe you've had a hard time being with, right? So the two siblings can enjoy something together instead of having experiences every day of fighting over stuff together. And that's so, so, so important, because once they realize, like, oh, I can have fun with my sibling too. Oh, let's do that game again, or let's do that experience again. And so I love it. I love it.
Yeah. It's when you think about how everybody needs that experience with another person, it becomes very relatable, unless, oh, developmentally we're moving backwards. If with your partners, with your friends, if you had to do your tax, well, for me, if I had to do my taxes every day with my husband, we would not have a lot of experiences saying, oh, this feels really good to be with this person. And then you start getting more defensive and more antsy and more stressed. You're anticipating, your body is anticipating. This is just really hard all the time. That's why you go on dates, or you go out, or you just relax with somebody, or you play a game. You play, right? Play is how your nervous system feels safe with somebody, and that you feel aligned and connected. And it doesn't, and it probably shouldn't always feel like work to do, but we're busy. There's a lot going on. It takes a lot of effort to like take it down and just be, enjoy, feel good with somebody. But that's the foundation for connection.
I mean, even at businesses, they do icebreakers all the time in team, like team building and things like that. And that's kind of why, although that's a different context, but the whole idea of, you know, just having these fun experiences.
Right. In a work situation, it's really important to be able to see someone else's perspective, to share ideas, to share the things that are really important to you, where there are conflicts all the time in the workplace. Functional, emotional, developmental capacity, 4, 5, and 6, those later capacities require the ability to feel comfortable and safe with someone, know that you have a lot of experience working something out with them so that you can take their perspective and see what they want you to be doing without feeling like you are in shutdown or misunderstood. And that doesn't come just because you're a grown up and your brain is mature. It comes from a million micro moments of getting to know somebody and setting that culture of, we'll figure it out, we'll be with each other, and we'll understand each other.
Yes, and some of these things are obvious when we think about it in terms of our adult relationships with other adults, but then we somehow forget about it when we're with children, because we think, oh, we need to be teaching them, they need to learn, they need to, you know, and you forget about that whole experiential piece that takes years to develop, and the whole idea of process-oriented learning that we talk about in the DIR model. Like, it's always a process. So do you have another example for parents who are struggling? Like, maybe, great, okay, the sensory idea is one thing, but now they're fighting over the sensory stuff or something like that.
Yeah, totally. So I have another context where one family was able to put a swing in their home, and it's one swing, but they have two kids. And there are a lot of opportunities to to feel a lot of different things when both kids want the swing at the same time. And so there is no right or wrong answer. It's also real life, but I think the thing that experience offered me is the necessity sometimes for grownups to be the anchor, to be the safe person, to set boundaries, to help everybody feel heard and understood, and then to help everybody figure out what the best solution is. So when we're thinking about a swing, helping somebody identify, why do you need the swing? Can you tell why this other person needs the swing? I see you really, really, really want the swing. I wonder if I could do X, Y, and Z. Can I give you another plan so you feel connected and held and emotionally regulation-wise supported while we're waiting for somebody else to finish?
And that's really where my son is at, Stephanie, at 14 and a half, because as long as he's engaged, and it's very easy for him to engage socially, he loves being with other people, and all of a sudden the attention has to divert to, and he's an only child, so he gets all of my attention, but all of a sudden in school the attention's diverted to another child who needs some attention, and that's when we see different behaviors happen, right? I don't know what else to do, so mm-hmm. I'm going to knock this over or take the other child's thing or, you know, make a scene of some kind. Mm-hmm. And I know one suggestion that fellow occupational therapist Maude LaRue had given, fellow to you, not fellow to me, had given us is, you know, give him a task so it sort of occupies him while he's waiting, because it's that downtime with that praxis component that's hard for him. So even if they were going to the library to get a book, walking back to the classroom was tough. So, can you carry the books back and bring them to Miss So-and-so? And then he has a job to do, he's focused on that, and he can do it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's one suggestion. But what are some other suggestions of how to do that? Because, you know, especially with non-speaking children or children who are very, maybe they're not understanding all of those verbal things that you just said, like, oh, why do you need the swing? Why does this child need the swing? Mm-hmm. And that kind of thing. So mm-hmm. What else can we do while they're waiting?
So what's really funny is that, and I'm sure this resonates with a lot of people, but if one person is playing with something and it looks like fun, everybody else wants to play with that too, right? The challenge of sharing is, especially if somebody has challenges with coming up with ideas, we see someone doing something, oh, that gives me an idea. I see how they did it. And I want to do that too, coupled with the memories of this makes my body feel really good. So the meaning of this activity is I have an idea. I've done it before. I know it feels good. My mirror neurons are firing. I see this person doing it, like, okay, new plan. That's what I do. And then when that's stopped because someone else is doing it, then we fall apart because we're not supported in the other areas. So I would say it's a combination of all the things. So acknowledging this was your plan and this is your idea. I see you looking at this person. They have this toy, they're swinging. You look so excited to do it. Despite the spoken language capacity of the person we're talking to, we can still connect with them and validate their idea, what they're thinking and feeling, and slowly shift towards offering a new idea and experience that hopefully we can think of something on the fly, because we're all superheroes, that supports their body, knowing that this is also going to feel good and it's going to give you something to have a new plan for until this other option becomes available again. So if the swing is not available, maybe we can experience the disappointment, the frustration, validate the plan, and then offer space and connection. I wonder about doing this task, going to the library, or I notice that we have a a faux and a CD player. Do people have CD players anymore? Some sort of opportunity to dance. I wonder if we could dance together instead. Or thinking about their profile, what feels good to them, and tailor our next idea to be supportive of their regulation, which is going to help them wait longer, maybe come up with their own idea, stay available for connection, and initiate a circle of maybe when they notice the other child getting off, they can say, okay, let me go try that swing now or that thing now, or maybe have a different idea of what they want to do.
And I'm thinking of a few other things, like maybe transition songs if your child's musical. So while one child is on the swing or doing something, the people who are waiting or the person who's waiting, has some kind of song that we're singing while the child's on the swing that the child who's not on the swing enjoys participating in. So I love doing that song and I do the song when I'm off the swing. And now I have two things that are fun, being on the swing and singing the song when I'm off the swing. Or also having, Jackie Bartel did a podcast with me about, visual prompts that can help. It's not necessarily floor time, it's just common sense to have something in front of us where we can see what's happening. So, and I guess it's harder to do for turn taking, but just having that idea of first your turn, then brother's turn, then back again and representing that visually so they have an understanding of it. Maybe having, a what do you call that when you have different stations of activities? So one does one thing while the other's on this, and then switch, and you make it a fun thing, like set a timer and then oh, switch, time to switch, and everybody's laughing and fun. Okay, you get on the swing, you go here, and then you switch and do another activity. I mean, there's all these kinds of structures that we can put around it to help make that more predictable for them while they're still learning. Do any of those ideas sound interesting to you?
I'm actually thinking about, yeah, so yes, we can add fun, we can add joy, we can give off the vibe of, like, I see what's going on, I'm the grown up, I'm going to keep you safe, we're going to work it out, and this is how we're going to work it out. This is our system. It would also encourage parents and therapists to slow down on offering the solution, because our solutions can go really fast. And I'm sure everyone's experienced the, oh no, you can't have that right now. Here, have this instead. And that doesn't help. A kid's like, I'm still thinking about what's happening over it. Like, excuse me, give me a minute. And I can just visualize my daughter coming over and sitting in my lap. And we can't do that for most of our clients because not everyone is 2 years old. But thinking about how do we support their body so they can process what's going on? Is it sit on the against the wall with me? If you can't sit on my lap, like come sit in the chair next to me. What's going on? Oh, I notice they're on the swing. They're going back and forth. They're going, oh, they look like they're having so much. Oh, you're really excited to start and join. I know. Not yet. Almost. And really giving someone time to process what it is that they're wanting to do, I think is really powerful, because there's like that urge of, oh, I have an idea, let me go do this idea. But the more we can stay connected of like, what are you noticing that you want to do? When it gets time to do that idea, we're going to be so much more regulated because we've processed it.
Yes, and I think that is especially helpful for older children because they may have had certain patterns for years. And trying to break out of that pattern that might not be successful and helping them get to that understanding. Yeah.
The real challenge of functional emotional developmental capacity one is to get to a place of being curious about the world, right? So sometimes when we're told no, or you have to wait, we get really dysregulated because our plan is stopped and I don't know what to do next. And that doesn't feel good. But when we can be grounded in our relationships and our connections and stop and stay curious about what's happening, that will allow you to get another idea or stay comfortable, comfort in the discomfort, right? We talked about that earlier of, I don't have another idea, but it's okay because I'm still processing what's happening. And when I'm ready, that idea will come, or I will be helped to have another idea, because then I'll be in a place to pay attention when Daria says, oh, let's go jump on the trampoline while we wait. I'll be ready for understanding that she's telling me something to begin with.
Yes. Okay. Lots to think about. Thank you so much, Stephanie. Focusing on connection first, relationship, keeping in mind those individual differences, especially praxis with some of our children, really working on that slowing down, because we're always so quick. We are, especially us parents, we're scared of the meltdown. We're scared of the reactivity. And so we want to give the solution so quickly. But staying in those moments, especially when our children are calm and regulated, to give those opportunities to stretch it out and allow them to sit in that, you know, stretched rubber band, as Jackie Bartel and Sanjay, the other OT that we did a podcast with about the rubber band, stretching that rubber band just so that they get used to that feeling of discomfort and what can I do about it when we're more regulated, so that when we're having these situations that come up, we have had practice sitting in that discomfort. So I love it all. Thank you so much for sharing these thoughts with us. And if anyone has more questions or anything like that, go to the blog post at affectautism.com, search sharing, and enter them in the comments section or contact me. Thank you so much, Stephanie.
Thank you.
Until next time, here's to choosing play and experiencing joy every day. The 2024 International DIR Conference is coming up March 15th and 16th in New York City, and registration is now free. Whether you're a professional, a parent, or a self-advocate who's already active in the DIR community, or you are new to DIR, ICDL welcomes you with open arms. Let's make this gathering the most vibrant and inclusive yet. Visit www.icdl.com/conferences for more information.